There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk, and you're a big part of the show, of course. The phone and text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. Also watching the radar, obviously getting rain, Mobile and Baldwin counties should hang on for a while. We'll get another update from our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. That'll happen about 12:25, somewhere in there. We'll get an update on that. And so that's part of the mix coming up today. Also, I've been getting the pictures here sent to my phone, the lines at this gas station, that gas station. Let me just for a second. So got a heads up on this on Saturday. Okay, somebody, a friend of mine that works in the business, has reason to know. He said, hey, you may want to fill up. Okay, so we filled up the family trucksters, did that on Saturday. But I'm yesterday stopping by to buy some other product at a gas station. And I'm there, and it is just, there were probably almost two dozen vehicles between what was at the pumps and what was waiting to get in the pumps. And then the people had the cans as well, the fuel cans to fill up. Y'all, quit for a second. I mean, there's a real discussion here of what's happening with Colonial Pipeline, but your fear of a gas shortage is causing a gas shortage, or you're causing your own issue here. It's a little bit like the toilet paper run. You know, the idea that if anything is, it's ammo, right? If anything is scarce, then when you find it, you're going to buy more than you ever would before. That is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not saying don't fill up your vehicle, don't take care, do those things. But y'all, really, I mean, the pictures I'm getting in, it's like several places right now that the lines are stretching. People gone for lunch, I guess, and they're trying to gas up every container they can. That Slurpee cup, you know, put, top that off, get a quarter gallon in there as well. So y'all, Let's deal with this logically. And we'll, by the way, got a guest coming on the show tomorrow to talk about what happened on the hacking side on this Colonial Pipeline. And I think it is a wake-up call for all business owners and all entities out there going forward. All right, today, second Tuesday of the month, I look up and I see Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Good to see you, sir.
Glad to be here, Sean.
Did you fill up?
No, I had my wife fill up.
I start seeing the cans come out like it's a hurricane coming.
Oh, it's post-hurricane.
You know, it's like fill up.
Pre-hurricane, post-hurricane. Yeah. Everybody's lined up to the one place that's got power or something, get gas.
And all it takes, I think, is seeing somebody with the fuel cans, and then they're filling them up. So you think, I better go get my fuel cans and fill mm-hmm. them up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a study in human behavior going on here.
Absolutely. So predictable, too.
Yeah, we've done it. So y'all break that cycle.
When the people start saying, don't panic and don't go buying a bunch of gas, well, guess what? That's like saying, go buy a bunch of gas.
And I'm not trying to do that. But all right, so much to talk about mm-hmm. today. And we'll, of course, as always, take y'all's calls and texts for the sheriff at 343-0106. But I want to, and we'll talk about crime and those issues in our area. But I got some Montgomery politics sure. questions to ask you. And the first one up, of course, the debate last week ending in, well, nothing for a gaming bill for the state of Alabama. It was interesting to me that the start of, before session even got started in Montgomery, all the messaging we were getting from Goat Hill, it was like 90% of the discussion was gaming bill. Mm-hmm. They come in like gangbusters there in the beginning of it. It dominates through the session, even to the last, well, second to last day, they're talking about it. But it looks like they're not getting anything done. I want to back up and talk about you and your participation in the last session. Governor Ivey said, okay, I'm going to impanel a commission to look into gaming in the state of Alabama. Then we'll come back with this information. You were one of those members.
I was.
Okay. So how did y'all do this? I mean, how many of you were there? Did y'all tell me kind of what that process was?
I think there was 12 of us. I'm trying to either 12 to 15 of us. It was a cross section across the state. We had representatives from all across the states and from different backgrounds. I was probably the one background guy with law enforcement. We had a couple of lawyers, one of which was a retired Supreme Court justice. We had a medical doctor, or a lot of financial people, bankers, and space people, and so it was a good cross section, a bishop, and represented everybody.
Okay.
All things. And so we came together, we divided up into subcommittees and studied different parts of gambling, and then we would get back together and put it all together and review and get more information. We reached out across the country. We heard from some of the heads of other gambling commissions and other lottery commissions and wanted to find out what the best practices were. And ultimately, we produced what we thought to be best practices, whether or not it would work or not work, what the state would tentatively receive, you know, and ultimately between $500 and $700 million in revenue, and how many jobs it would be, and the fact that the jobs would pay almost double what the average salary or the median salary was in Alabama, and found out a lot of different things. Of course, the lottery is a big money maker, and then the casinos, the slot machines are the big makers, but they don't have the employees behind it, whereas you have your gaming tables, that's where all the jobs come from. And so you'd get a lot of job creation from creating casinos and a lot of construction. And also we put all that forward, and the leadership of both the House and the Senate seemed to, from the reports that I was getting, were accepting of it, and it looked like he was going to move. We even did a study where I think the survey was 74% of the Alabamians were for gambling, and then mm-hmm. it broke it down for casino gambling, just lottery, or in sports betting. And sports betting is, of course, the newest thing, probably the smallest thing, but it has the most growth opportunity. It was still favored, but at like 54%. Everything else, I think casinos was in the mid-60s.
Which means lotto is way high.
Yeah, it's way high, but everybody's been – you know, thinking about lottery for a long time. Of course, I knew I followed it, and I've always followed it, like, and sort of felt like I knew the politics of it. And someone said, let's just do just a lottery. And I knew, no, that will never fly. And
why? For people who have not followed
this. Okay, for people that don't know, the Porch Creek Indians have been big players in this state. Nothing wrong with that. They give a lot of money back to mm-hmm. different public charities, but they're politically active. And so for them to go along with just a lottery, that would be pulling $200 to $300 million out of the, I guess you'd say, the expendable economy of gamblers.
Okay.
And that would be taking them out of the Indian casinos, and they'd be spending the money on lottery. So I knew they would be opposed to that. So then we heard from people that represented some of these illegal gambling establishments across the state, and all these
the sheriff pointing out, so the illegal gambling establishments, what we've talked about, that have just been operating off and on in our state, are confident enough that they contributed their opinion to this.
Yeah, and I thought, man, how's this going to work out? I mean, and we heard from a couple, I don't necessarily want to name the counties, but some of the counties are almost totally dependent on the electronic bingo, which is clearly illegal under the state Supreme Court.
The kind of ruling that says
state
it.
Supreme Court has ruled 8 or 9 times. Mm-hmm. Once again, we'll tell you this is illegal. It
right.
may not be illegal under federal standards, but it is illegal under the law and under the Constitution of the state of Alabama. We don't need to tell you that anymore. It's not for us. Alabama just needs to do its job. But you've got four of those big
sheriffs in other counties.
They choose not to enforce it, and I think although the Attorney General has chosen to enforce it several times, it ends up costing the state of Alabama millions of dollars in legal fees, because all they do is they appeal the cases and have to appeal it all the way up, and it's costing them $1,000. It's only a misdemeanor offenses that they're trying to enforce. And in some of those areas, when it first starts happening, some of the circuit judges over the years within that county will rule in favor of the illegal establishments, and in some cases order them to give back the machines and give back the money, and then the state has to appeal those decisions, and then it just gets tied up with the Supreme Court.
So these people are having input into this. I mean, this is what we've tried to explain to folks, why we can't have nothing nice when it comes to
lottery. Well, those counties have, you know, they have representatives and they have senators.
But they are breaking the law.
Yeah, they sure are.
Okay, keep going.
Absolutely. And so they want to side with their citizens. You know, they think it should be legal, and therefore they're going to treat it like it's legal, when in fact it's not legal.
Well, there are things that I think should be legal that aren't legal that I treat as illegal because that's the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know,
just not
85-90% of people will obey the law without having to enforce it. And,
right.
You know, but there's other those others are going to push it as far as they can. And they, like I say, they've gotten entrenched with the monies. A lot of county services and city services are provided by the monies that come from those things. And
so,
then, of course, a lot of people personally making a lot of money out of it.
And y'all weren't tasked with navigating that. Y'all were tasked with saying, here's what gaming would mean to the state. But these people become part of the discussion because it has to go
through.
It has
to be part of it. And then if you had a commission, you could finally have some commission that could then once and for all regulate the illegal gambling as well as the legal gambling. If you had legal gambling, people would not go to some of these other places that are illegal. And some of those bingo things, there's disputes
but those
where people
illegal
have hit it, winning several $1,000s, and they've said, nope, you really didn't win. I said, what? It's showing. And so they go to the Attorney General. Attorney General says, I can't enforce that because it's illegal. I can't get your money for you.
And these, but for people who haven't been around this, illegal stuff is not like it's in a shady back room.
No.
These are facilities, Sheriff.
That's
I mean,
right.
These are like, hey, come look at us. Here
that's
we're
right.
doing this. Come parking and come have lunch. And
Those are the big places. And then you still have your little back room illegal casino, I mean, illegal gambling places that may be set up in bars and other things around the state or in private hit houses or something like that. Well, the people that gamble in those, they would probably much rather go to a bona fide, legally run establishment knowing that you're not going to get cheated out of their money if they so choose to gamble.
So y'all go through this process. You give the information, and then we hear former Senate President Pro Tem, but Senator Del Marsh brings this bill in. Your feeling then, from what research y'all did you feel that it was something that would pass?
When he first introduced it, I think he went about trying to say, okay, I'm not going to force this through. We're going to have the debate. And he originally had the votes, and then all of a sudden he lost the votes and because he gave them too much time for those special interests to attack, you know, some of it and change their mind. And then a lot of that got played in. But eventually at the very end, you know, he was able to bring it forward again and get it out of the Senate, I think. And then it went to the House. And I was led to believe that there were votes there right before it was over, you know, for communications with the governor's office, and that there was going to be real close, but they felt like there were the votes, and it turned the other way at the last minute. And
one of the problems is there's the reality of what you're talking about, the special interests there, and we've talked about it on this radio station a bunch. But then if you haven't lived in that world, you're just a butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and you hear that this package is going to favor these two entities, duopoly, and restrict the number of opportunities to get in the gaming world. You hear that and you go, this is cooked. This is you know, this is home cooking 101.
Yeah, see, a lot of people were mad at the Indians and because they were hearing this discussion about the compact, and people don't understand the law, but when gambling began being legalized at the federal level through the Department of Interior, they gave the law was written in favor of the Indians as if a way to reward the Indians for mistreatment over all the years. And so they have the upper hand. And people don't realize that you have to negotiate with them. And if you don't, they can appeal to the Department of Interior, and they can decide the part on the Indians for them and give them everything they want. And then the state would get nothing. So with a compact, you negotiate with them. They'll give the state something if – you know, they have to give the state has to give them something of value, and then you can get something back of value from them. What they would get for value would the ability for them to have Class 3 gaming that they can't have now. But and they were very much willing to negotiate.
And they would have said, okay, you can have lottery if we can have Class 3 gaming.
That's right.
Because they'd take that deal. Yeah. Even though you said it took some of the money out of the mix, there'd be so much more that would come in with Class 3.
They could do that. But you know, don't just have just lottery and leave us out.
All right, coming right back, more of our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. We'll do that, talk a little bit more on this gaming front, and then we're going to talk prisons as somebody in charge of the jail here. What about incarceration at a prison level? The state still has nothing done. Also, medical marijuana, part of our discussion this hour. Love to hear from you. 343-0106. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. And it is Midday Mobile. It's also your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. So the work y'all did on that, y'all going into it and hearing what was brought by Senator Del Mar, she thought this was something that would pass.
Well, when it first started off, I did, and then all of a sudden it hit a, you know, hit a roadblock, and mm-hmm. I thought, okay, it's probably over with. And but then I thought if the governor maybe got more involved, and I think she did get involved, but she still did not get, you know, real outwardly involved. But she was behind the scenes meeting with leadership from both houses, and so.
Well, it felt like that House bill, the last one the House looked at was, I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything that they wouldn't admit to. The governor's office wrote a lot of that in it, you know.
I think so. It was rewritten over a final mm-hmm. weekend, and then something else come up at the last minute. And I think some came forward with just a lottery bill only, and that just blew everything up. You know, like I say, I knew that wasn't going to pass anyhow.
That's the thing that. Dead. But people who don't have the insight,
yeah,
they hear you say that. Why wouldn't a lottery? Because of these special interests.
Sure, sure. I mean, if you have something that's making a bunch of money, if you had this only grocery store in town and maybe limits on mm-hmm. Who could build, and then all of a sudden the city starts saying, we're going to let somebody build a Walmart right next door to you, naturally you'd fight against that.
Sure.
I mean, we've seen those fights. So.
I understand the businesses. Because mm-hmm. Porchmanic Creek Indians, I understand completely. It's mm-hmm. their job to make
protect
money.
Their
and protect their I get it. I completely get it. The McGregor Legacy Dog Tracks, mm-hmm. because they're operating illegally, I have... Mm-hmm. But my problem is then you have to have legislators that play ball.
Yeah.
The entities wanting to protect their turf, I get that. That's mm-hmm. human. That's normal. But the people we elected, if they went to their constituents in the districts and said, hey, if we could just get a lottery bill done first, would y'all want that? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Let's do that first and do the rest. A lot of people say, yeah. But then the reality is the people that know the business, all right, they know where that's headed.
So I just – it's good to hear from your perspective. You were, you know, part of that panel, and I thought that was a worthwhile addition. I'm going to grab a couple calls and sure. texts for you here. Carl is in Theodore. Carl, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Sheriff. Thank you for doing such a great job, you and your guys.
Thank you.
Listen, Rich, I'm calling. About a month ago, I brought a buddy of mine down to y'all's office to apply for his pistol permit. It was his first pistol permit ever, mm-hmm. and the officer there behind the desk had him fill out the paperwork and drop it in what looked like a mailbox or something over mm-hmm. there, and he said it would take approximately 3 weeks, and they would contact him. Well, it's been almost a month, if not more than a month. He's not heard anything, and I was wondering if there's a phone number that he could call and follow up on that.
Yeah, if you'll just call the regular number down there or call my office, 574-7827, we'll follow up on it. But
what's that number again?
574-7827, and we'll follow up and get an answer. They're running about 3 weeks. We issued 7,000 more permits this year than we did last year.
I was fixing to ask you this.
7,000, and just, you know, that we put additional employees in there, and I apologize it's taking longer. We used to get them things turned around in 10 minutes, but when the coronavirus hit, it just set us back. But
I got mine renewed in like 10 minutes, but yeah. This is the first time. So yeah. You say it's 574-7827.
And you know, you can also apply online and get it online too without even coming in. But some people are not comfortable with doing that, so we understand that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have him call this number and find out what the scoop is. And I sure do appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Carl, for the call. Speaking of, sir, that was one of my questions. So where are we on concealed carry permit issuance for this? Can you break it down, like the total number that we have in the county and then what we're looking
at? I think we're around between 63,000 and 64,000 annual permits are in existence or active right now.
Wow.
And, you know, and it's been growing steadily for the last several years. And you know, I just don't get any complaints about somebody having to pay $20 for a permit. I've never had a complaint personally to me. People say, oh, you shouldn't have to pay for it, da-da-da-da-da. Well, that's I just don't get the complaints. It's just a small group of radicals, in my opinion, that want to argue against it. But, you know, if you do away with the pistol permits and just have constitutional carry or open carry, would you like to be in a dinner club and anybody in there could have a concealed gun on them, or some 19-year-old pull up to go in a nightclub and say, man, I think I need some protection. They said, well, I got a gun here. And he just said, well, let me carry it in there with me in case I need it. You know, somebody's maybe never even shot a gun going there, and he gets a little tanked up or something. And that's the kind of stuff you're against. What about a guy that's been arrested 7 times for barroom fights and 4 times for drunk, none of which would prohibit him from getting a pistol permit perhaps, but the sheriff would have that discretion maybe. He'd have to make it. But he wouldn't even have a check done on him. He goes in there. And I just, there's places I wouldn't want to go in anymore if I knew everybody in there could legally be packing heat without a gun check on them.
We come back from the news. I do want to talk about that because every year, another
it
push here for
up.
Constitutional
carry.
Right.
We had to fight it down in this year.
All right, so we'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 online at fmtalk1065.com. Remember, check us out Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, podcast waiting for you through our website, or subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer, whatever podcast platform out there is your favorite. Most likely we're on there. If not, let us know. We'll make sure that happens. Our guest in studio, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. I do want to get into some of these constitutional carry bills in a second, although George is holding in Mobile, has a question about the lottery bill. Hey, I wish there was a lottery bill. Hey, George.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not a question. It's more of a statement.
Okay.
And I will make the statement in jest. It's kind of, I just say, why don't we just label it as being racist and just say that, you know, by not passing this, we're denying some of Alabama's poorest citizens to have opportunity to get scholarships and broadband. And we're just trying to keep the rate people down, you know, keep them, let's just label it racist like everything else is labeled. And then we can, you know, maybe get something passed.
There you go. George's suggestion. We'll see.
It might bring more attention, that's for sure.
Yeah, it would probably bring more attention. Speaking of what happens in Montgomery, so constitutional carry bill, and I'd like to get your perspective on this and your years in law enforcement. You and I have talked about this many times, mm-hmm. and you've come in and you are a proponent for concealed carry permits,
right?
Mm-hmm. Something changed in our state where you went from may issue to shall issue.
That's right.
That's already been there. Now this move to have constitutional carry with still having concealed carry so you could have reciprocity in other states, but this idea that you can't license somebody to conceal and carry. They have the right to do it. So why don't they? Why don't they have the right? Why is this not our Second Amendment right to conceal and carry that weapon?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled a number of years ago that states can enact concealed carry permits and restrict people from carrying them concealed with a law, and they've done that, and the Supreme Court has upheld that. Constitutional carry does away with having to have a required permit, so people could carry a gun anywhere concealed and no background check on. Of course, some would argue, well, they've had a background check done on when they bought the gun. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. If they bought it from a licensed firearm dealer, they would. But if they bought it from Sean or Sam, they wouldn't have. We wouldn't be a licensed firearm dealer. So if they acquire a gun any way, shape, or form from a friend or whatever, just like I say, a 18-year-old kid, somebody could hand him a gun and say, hey, let's go in this club tonight, and it's okay. And
well, see, you know, Earl on the text line, though, is saying that he said, like, well, they're doing it anyway.
No, they're not doing it anyway. They like to say that, but so many people are don't carry guns for fear of being arrested for not having a concealed carry permit. They can't carry them in their automobile without having a concealed carry, and so there's a background check run against it. And when I'm sitting in a, I don't go to bars, but if I'm sitting in a dinner club, you know, where there is, well, I might go to a sports bar. I take that back, you know. So if I'm sitting in a sports bar and there's everybody in there could have a gun hidden on them if there was not a requirement of a concealed carry. You know, the worst barroom brawler in Mobile that may have never been convicted of a felon could have a pistol on him. There's nothing we could do against him until he pulls out and shoots somebody. And it's just, you know, I'm elected to protect the public safety of the citizens of Mobile County, and this is something I feel very good about, solidly entrenched, that I'm standing up for the safety of the people. If you so desire to have a concealed carry, just get a concealed carry permit. If the legislators are so concerned that these people are having to pay for it, pass a law that says, hey, they can sign a poverty thing where they come in and say, I just can't afford $20. Just put it in writing. They can't afford $20. We'll give them one.
Okay.
You know, but if you want to tell a lie, tell it in writing is what I always say.
But now, and you pointed out, too, that the amount of the permit fee, this is not something decided here.
No,
it's Montgomery
decided
decision.
By the legislators.
When people know that.
It was set in 1984 in Mobile County at $20. There's never been an effort since then to increase it.
It's not something that you decide.
No, exactly. And and sure, that does the sheriff's office bring some money in? Yeah, $20 a piece. Of course, you take away the expenses of, you know, laminating them in the machines and all like that. But we still make money, and that goes into a fund that has to be used for law enforcement purposes. And yes, we use that fund for a lot of training and equipment for the deputies and all the people I talk to. They're glad to know that that money's going to a good purpose, and, right. and they're glad to pay it. So,
and you've issued how many? And how many concealed carry permits have you issued?
There's somewhere around 63,000 currently in Mobile County that are active, because some people buy one year to a 5 year period. So, right. but at any given time, I mean, right now, that's how many are active out of 419,000 people in Mobile County.
So,
most adults have. Now, this is interesting too. The biggest increase in the last couple of years by race and by sex or black female women is
Hooray.
The biggest increase.
That's great.
Both
Makes
in purchasing
smile.
Arms, firearms, and getting a pistol permit.
Minority's great, but women, I love.
Sure.
Like, it's one of my, you know, when I hear a friend of mine who's a lady tells me they, you know, purchased a firearm, they got trained with it, and they have a concealed carry permit, I say hooray. I love it.
Sure. Absolutely. I'm all for people that, you know, are level-headed and carrying a weapon to be able to protect themselves, as long as they feel like they're willing to use it. But don't have a gun that you're not willing to use only to give to the criminal to use it against you or your family.
A lot of truth in that, for sure. Yeah. Get that training. Know what you're doing with it. While we stay with the talk about what goes on in Montgomery, the prison bill. It's not even there. So we didn't have it. Legislature doesn't get it done. Governor goes through the process of doing it through the executive branch. We can go back in the backstory of what happened to the funding through Barclays and all that. It falls apart. Now we have, and we have the possibility of federal receivership for our prison system, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You got Judge Thompson looking at this. You have a plan to build prisons that's now not financed. Mm-hmm. And the legislature has one more day to meet. One of the rumors coming out is that they're going to get something done on a bond issue on Monday when they meet. Your feelings on this? Because, I mean, in the incarceration world, at the jail level, you get this.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's how it should have been done all along, was a bond issue. But give the governor credit. The legislature has had 6, 7, 8, 9 years
that's
to
correct.
Fix the prison problem. They never could agree. They had one bill after another, and everybody say, you're not taking the prisons out of my county because my people depend on their jobs there. And others say, not in my backyard. And so the legislature could never, ever agree on funding new prisoners. So the governor did. Probably the only thing she could do was take it in an executive way. But now getting that private funding and all like that, that's a terrible idea. It's probably the only way she could do it. But it's just like the toll bridge thing fell apart because – you know, when you put private parties to make money, they're going to figure ways to keep coming at you, getting more money. But had they drew plans for prisons, agreed upon that, and then funded it through bonds, that's the way to go. You own the prisons, you know.
So why is that so hard now? I mean, because is it those same people that wouldn't pass through a prison bill through the legislature in the past 7 or 8 years now have – they can vote against bonding as a way to vote against – that change. But what happens if the federal government takes over?
Well, that's how most prisons get built, is the federal government takes over and it takes it out of the hands of the legislatures.
But then we pay the bill.
A big bill, much more. Just like when you go into consent decrees where law enforcement agency or something is taken over by the federal government with a consent decree, they spend millions more than what they originally would have. New Orleans has been under a consent decree for, I think, 19 or 20 years.
And it's not federal money paying for the changes decreed by the feds. It's state money.
It's state money and local money, and they'll have to pass whatever they can to pay it. And you don't get to choose how much salaries you want to pay these, quote, experts that come in from far away.
This is what I've been talking about for years and years, and I just look to Montgomery and nothing. And I understand protecting your home turf and being a homer for your home turf, but if the whole thing falls apart,
eventually
we've all lost.
You lose the ability to protect it.
I mean, the bluff game's gone on too long. I mean, we already have the judgment against us.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the question, can we avert the receivership, right?
Right. That's usually what they do, is they put a judgment against you and start fining you so many dollars a day and until you fix the problem. And then usually the courts will turn around and say, okay, that fine that I've been holding against you, we'll let it apply towards the building of it. How it usually works.
The question is, if they don't get it done, and I don't know how they get it, maybe they could get it done in one day if sine die, I don't know. But special session probably on this, and is that going to be fast enough to avoid?
I don't see how they could get it. Now, I know Senator Greg Albright, and I think they passed some legislation or prepared to pass legislation that would create bonds to build prisons. So I think that was either done or started, and he was waiting on the governor to give him the go-ahead or something, I think.
But the same bunch of voters that would not let a bill go through the legislature as it is, they could hold this up for the bond issue.
They could once again do that, yeah. I think it depends, and I think that's what I like about this governor, that she does work with the leadership of the two respective houses and certain committees, and the leadership are the ones that have to step up and be responsible and get things done. And you've seen them do it on certain things where they stepped up. You know, the first year they went in office, the leadership stepped up and said, we're going to have a gas tax. And everybody was trying to run for cover.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that was needed and necessary. And I think the leadership told the people under them, if you don't go along with this, you're going to be penalized. And so basically everyone in the House and Senate, I think, voted for it except for less than a handful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those people were made to pay a price. That's kind of how it works. So it's up to them to let good leaders to then tell them what they need to do, even if they don't want to do it.
We'll see what happens on this. And there's a whole other part of it with the number of ADOC prisoners that are left in your jail.
Yeah, we've got 400 and something right now that should be in penitentiary.
Y'all hear that.
Seven of them up this week, but we've got 400 and something that are due.
400 of the prisoners in the jail here in Mobile are actually the responsibility of
the
prisons of Alabama Department of Corrections.
Yes.
I know we talk about that each.
Worst troublemakers, worst ones.
Well, it's not your responsibility.
Look, some of them are begging to go to the penitentiary because they can get away with more stuff in the penitentiary than they can with our jail. I mean, I hate to admit this, but you've got criminal syndicates taking place in both jails and prisons.
And these are people that belong in the prisons.
Yes.
ADOC leaves them in the jail.
Yes.
They use the excuse of COVID for a while, right?
Yeah,
still.
They've used that. And then they use the excuse they're overcrowded. And I think they're trying to relieve some of the pressures. Yeah.
So are you.
I'd love for a study to say who's over more crowded on a per capita basis or per percentage of what it was built for.
But it's also not your responsibility as the jail to hold state prisoners, correct?
That's right. Exactly.
Dave's in Mobile. He's up next. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, man. The first things, the people of Alabama are not in control. Evidently, and I just caught parts of it, but the Poarch Creek Indians get to decide whether the people of the state of Alabama get any kind of gambling, it sounded like.
Well, they're a big voice,
for sure. The prisons, we pay taxes. The prisons, the bridge, we pay taxes. Where does all this tax money go? That we got to make a bridge a business, we got to hire private businesses to run a prison. The pistol permit, I don't mind paying $20.
Thank you.
But legal people pay $20. Bad people get to pay nothing. Man, the people of this state, the little people, what'd you call them? The candlestick makers?
I call them butchers, bakers. All of us are butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers.
You can call yourself whatever you want, but that's not what I am. I'm a small guy, but I'm not none of those things. We're not in control. The politicians, the richest organizations, Poarch Creek of Indians, and whoever else ain't being named, they're in control. They get to decide what all of us candlestick makers get to do.
That's why I say it. That's why I point it out.
7,000 new people, that's $140,000 extra. Good people's money. Mm-hmm. Doing what? We're keeping state prisoners? Where's our tax dollars, man? It's taken out of our paychecks every week. Man, it's trash. We're garbage. The rich people control all of us. But, you know, the real struggle is not between races. It's between statuses.
That's right. You're speaking Charles Barkley, aren't you?
Controlling everything, and politicians are part of it. They're being controlled by the richest us little people.
I appreciate that.
He made a couple of good points. And that's why, Sean, I've always said it's important for everybody to pay attention to politics, who's in office. And if you don't spend the time to study what they do, then at least reach out to a good friend of yours that you trust, that you know does study them. And then when it comes time to vote, adhere, take their advice, but don't just go to the polls not knowing.
That's why we're here. That's why FM Talk 106.5 is here.
You do a great job in educating us.
We point this stuff out. All right, be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. And your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. We've got a question about another piece of... I'll ask you a lot of Montgomery questions here, but sure. That's part of the mix right now. So we reported here a week and a half ago or so before the vote on the medical marijuana bill, the district attorneys from around the state, I think 26 or so...
20-something, yes.
...went to Montgomery to protest the medical marijuana bill. Your take on that from your law enforcement take?
Okay. You know, this has been coming, you know, like a tidal wave across the country the last mm-hmm. several years. And the one thing on this medical marijuana bill that I see is... I don't think they properly educated the public when they say medical marijuana that people's going to go get a lid of grass and go home and roll it up and smoke right. It because they got a medical. It's
there's
not
no
going to be.
There's
no joints. There's
right.
no leaves.
Right.
It's all pre-made up into maybe gummy bears or something. Or even
I don't
pills.
Even, I don't even know any gummies.
But yeah. So I just didn't have a dog in that fight in medical right. marijuana. And someone asked me about there was a bill where the second time you get arrested for possession of marijuana. Personal use, it makes it a felony. I don't go along with that either. I mean, if you're drunk the first time, second time, third time, it's still you know, it's the same charge.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not many people ever go to prison for personal use of marijuana, even if it's their second time, and it ups it to a felony. Usually that's just stuff to force them to plead guilty to a paraphernalia or misdemeanor use. They knock it down. But I couldn't disagree with them wanting to change that. I mean, that was passed at a time when, you know, the marijuana is viewed much differently. I don't support legalizing marijuana, but I would
do you believe they're different
decriminalizing it in some way, you know, but
do you believe they are? I mean, the debate over medical marijuana and recreational marijuana are not the same.
No, they're not the same. Of course, I know everybody says that's the start of it. Well,
only,
you know,
if the legislature I keep pointing this out, and it is true that states went medical marijuana and went to recreational, but their state legislatures then voted through a recreational. They didn't. The medical marijuana bill can't become recreational.
That's right. I mean, it'd take an entirely another thing. But I mean, everything starts with something. You know, the week starts with Sunday. There's always right. a Friday following a Sunday.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't have to.
I mean, but they could. There's no. I mean, if you elect the right people, you're talking about this, mm-hmm. and you have the people in
yeah.
Montgomery you want. And you tell them no for recreational marijuana, then it will never happen.
That's correct, if you put the right people in there. So, you know, that's the one thing about the legislature. People go to Montgomery, and you just don't have that very good coverage of what they're doing
mm-hmm.
and who's voting how. I mean, you can dig it up. You can look it up. Now you can actually get some video of some of the things. Of course, sometimes they'll have a voice vote rather than a recorded vote,
mm-hmm.
and they do it for that very reason, to protect their individuals and swapping votes and stuff like that. But they do things sort of not privately, but way afar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people get frustrated with some of the laws that are passed or some of the laws that don't get passed. But if they were here doing it locally, you know, you have a better chance. You can get up and go down and watch the city council when it's mm-hmm. non-COVID, you know. But you just can't pick up and go to Montgomery. And I've done that many times. Sometimes you get up there in the games they play where they put your bill on the last thing, and all of a sudden they run out of time and say, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to reschedule that. They did that on the gun bill a couple of years ago. Three or four times we went up there, and they'd always put it and reset it just to wear us out from keep coming up there.
Right.
Dirty, dirty politics.
And as we look back here at home, got just a couple minutes left before we wrap up, crime stats. You know, we talk about, I've been looking at, you know, the city of Mobile and the issues here for gun violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, straight up gun violence. What about the county? What are you seeing?
We're not seeing what we're seeing in the city, but
okay.
but we don't have the same problems that the city has. What you're seeing in the city is a lot of gang violence, drug gang violence, and we're going to a whole new level where people are shooting at each other, and if I can't
whether
shoot you because I'm after you,
not.
If I can't get you, then I'm going to shoot your parents. You know, we've seen that in a couple
yes.
of cases already. That was that's a drug gang type violent shoot thing with that the grandparents or some of that rapper that's in jail
yeah.
right now. Yeah, and so you're seeing some of that. We've seen that a couple of times in the last year, but it again, it's the proliferation of guns. There's so many guns out there. There's so many guns available to be stolen and passed around, and that's just our society. Parts of our society have turned towards gun violence as a way to settle everything, and
it's sad. So how much of that, you talk about that drug gang violence, how much of that is gang on gang? you think? Is it, like, because your perspective when you were police chief, so you know Mobile, is it 50%, 75%, 80%?
I think 75% of it is gang on gang.
Bad guy versus bad guy.
Bad guy versus, oh, more than just 75% when it's bad guy versus bad guy, but it's something most of us, gangs and drugs, but there's other bad guy on bad guy. But so when you have one killing or shooting, then that's going to result in another killing or shooting and another. All you may have four or five homicides out of one beef.
You know, and I've heard this when Public Safety Director Batiste was Chief Batiste. He talked about that same thing, the kind of the Hatfields and McCoys of this. Mm-hmm. How do you shut that down? Do you ever? Or has that been here since Cain and Abel?
I think we're always challenged about ways to combat that and try to pick off the shooters. There's not as many shooters as you would be made to believe. Like, for instance, everybody recalled a big shootout on Bel Air Boulevard about 6 weeks ago. There were 83 rounds fired in that thing from three different guns, and there was like four or five people shot. And when they went to ask him about it, you know, I got shot over here somewhere else.
Nobody noticed anything, right?
Nobody'd say anything. And of course, as crude as this sounds, one of the shooters is paralyzed, and he was playing the same thing. So now he probably won't go do shoot any more shooting, but I think he may have been one of the main ones. But of course, now he's a sitting duck being paralyzed for somebody to finish him off. It's just sad that we've gotten to this level, but, you know, the police will take action against them, but you got to cooperate and help us. But I can see why witnesses don't want to say, I'll tell you who shot
you. Well, sure, that's the issue. And we've talked about before, if I'm in a neighborhood and there's plenty of bad guys there, and law enforcement's there once in a while, but bad guys are there all the time.
That's right. And, of course, now the police have to defend themselves. And you know, we saw where the mayor of Atlanta admitted that she fired the police officer because she felt like if she didn't fire him that there was going to be burning down the city when she knew it was wrong, that she didn't give him his due process, but
that's how judgments
are him.
Yeah,
rather than that, you know, that's the mentality, and we're seeing more and more social media overruling the law and people caving into the social media pressure instead of following the law, and I'm scared where that's taking us.
Well said. Sheriff, people want to get in touch with you, whether it be about concealed carry permits or who's in jail or what's going on.
Yeah, follow us on our website. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We put out all that information, but you can look up, see who's in jail. You can see who's wanted by going to our website, and you can help us out by tipping us off. You know where somebody's
wanted. And you do that. That's back to for a second here to this people in the neighborhood where law enforcement's there sometimes, but bad guys are there all the time. Is it truly anonymous? People can...
Yeah, I mean, you know, technically, if we wanted to try to go through all kinds of hoops and try to find out that email address, eventually we did. But no, we don't do that, and we're not forced to do it. So we don't care. If you give us that, we're going to keep it anonymous.
So if somebody has that issue there, they don't want to be seen talking to somebody from law enforcement before
that's
it happens.
They can send
do it
in. Exactly. Give us a tip. And exactly. That's after a crime, when you knock on doors, people don't want to see you talking to them at their door front, or then go back in and call you or send you a text message.
There you go. Sheriff, as always, I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sean, and thanks for all you listeners. Good points I made.
All right, coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Well, let's talk about these bills in Montgomery, because Representative Chip Brown joins us coming up next.